The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Wednesday, July 1st, 2009. This is episode number 184, and I'm sitting here in Jules' recording studio because we're getting ready to go down to Laguna Seca. So, hi, Jules.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Obviously, just spent a long, hot day driving down here, but now it's down here, and that's kind of cool. So, really looking forward to this weekend. I don't know about you, but
yeah. Bob just unloaded his bike. My bike is sitting up there, out there. We got our packs all ready to go. We're about to hit the road, and it's going to be a great weekend.
Just kind of throw a quick podcast up there and get on the road.
Yeah,
let's get out of here. But we have some other good stuff going on. We got a Leon Haslam interview that Jim Race did, and Jules also did a really cool interview with one of our sort of personal heroes, Jules.
Randy Mamola. Randy Mamola was at Riders for Health Benefit on Saturday that I attended, and he agreed to talk to me. We talked for about 20 minutes, and we could have easily talked for hours, but there was other stuff to do for him. So. But he was great.
Yeah, so this is excellent stuff. So we're going to get to that here in a minute. And we did want to talk a little bit about World Superbikes at Donington and maybe a little bit about MotoGP at Assen. Just a super quick wrap-up and Laguna preview. As you can understand, we're super busy getting ready to go out there and enjoy Laguna Seca for ourselves. And we'll have some big shows coming up afterwards with all the material that we collect like we do every year.
Yeah, well, we'll make up for the short one.
Yes. So, Donington, which I haven't even had a chance to watch yet because I just got back from the AVT and all that. So, Jules, why don't tell us what happened. Bring me up to speed.
Basically, the most important thing that happened is that Ben Spies was in pole, back on pole, and he won both races. And Haga was able to, you know, contain the point damage in the first race, but in the second race, Haga had a really bad crash at the Kappes. And it's been compared to the Bayless crash of 2007, when because the bike landed on top of him and it looked bad. He actually got up and walked away. Later, they suspected that he had fractures in his vertebra, so he was actually airlifted out to a local hospital where they took x-rays and did MRIs and all that kind of stuff, and then they found that it was actually an old injury, so he wasn't quite as clean as we had thought. He actually had an old injury that that had healed already, but he has a broken his left arm is broken, and I think there's some other bits and pieces broken here and there. But the amazing news is that his team is basically saying that he will be back for Brno, so he's not going to miss anything. And I find it a little hard to believe because I think it's a little bit of a FUD. Like, maybe, I don't know why they might want to do that, but it sounds like they just don't want to give away the extent of the injuries, or they're just being very optimistic. But
because it was a pretty bad break. I mean,
it's just the violence of that thing looked really bad. I mean, most, you know, you see a guy go down like that, you basically expect him to be out for two or three rounds. Now, he is lucky because we have a long break before Brno and then another long break. So, at worst, he's going to miss one round, two races. But Ben Spies is now within 14 points.
Right.
That sizable
lead, yeah, that Haga had is
way
gone. It's gone.
And I do have to say that as much as I've been saying, you know, I want Haga to win, then just Ben Spies is the best rider out there. He really is. He is just, every week he's proving me, not proving me wrong, because I know he's, I've always been, I've known he's good, but he just keeps blowing me away more and more. I mean, he really just had total control over these, both the races, and he continues to just mount those points, and the only time he really fails is when the bike fails him.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, by and large. And it's a, I mean, you were talking about it last week with Ben Spies, but he's a very, very talented guy, and it'd be interesting to see him in MotoGP going head to head with the likes of Lorenzo and Rossi and Stoner,
yeah,
and other super. I mean, you know, he's going against world class in World Superbike as well, but it's just, you know, I'd like to see him in MotoGP doing that too. So It's not good news for Haga's championship thing, because even if he's at Brno, he's going to be less than 100%.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, if he's going to be there, he's going to be racing for 5 points, 10 points, just to minimize the damage from... I mean, 10 points would be actually great with injuries.
Right.
To minimize how much Spies will be ahead by the end of that round, so...
Remains to be seen. We've still got several rounds left and all of that, and who knows what can happen. So it's been a good year, and I'll have to catch up on some racing when I get back. As it was just a deluge of stuff being gone for 2 weeks and trying to catch up with Catalunya and Assen and all of that good stuff. And speaking of Assen, the race itself, I mean, turned into the first few laps were great.
The first few laps were great, and the qualifying was amazing.
Yeah.
Qualifying was amazing. Probably one of the best qualifyings of the season. Some crazy stuff going through that chicane, you know. And you wanted to talk about the camera angles.
Exactly, talking about the chicane when you mentioned that. It seems like that Dorna or whoever is actually in charge of buying the equipment and everything has kind of got some new toys going on, because there's some slow-mo shots that I don't recall. They seem better than they used to be, the way they've been doing some of this stuff. And there was a crane or a jib or whatever, the flying camera business and... So we're revamping the way they're shooting these things. But one thing that made me notice is because of Assen, with the you've got so many left right kind of kinks, you know, chicanes and that little tiny one that's sort of right before the start finish and all of that. And they'd set up a camera and you'd see these bikes transitioning quickly from right to left, and it just demonstrated to me how much the Ducati requires.
Yeah,
wrestling around.
Yes,
yes. I mean, the differences and some of the lines.
Well, you look at the moment that the wheel lifts up on a Ducati in the corner, the front wheel is completely turned, because that's how much he's putting so much, you know, body steering on that thing. That by the time when it lifts, it just turns.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I was wondering. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, because I did notice that it's like he's, you know, crossed up wheelie, you know, right there in the middle of the chicane. That's not a good thing. But yeah, it wasn't like that. Whereas the Yamaha, and to a certain extent the Hondas, seem just more flowing.
Yeah, I think the Fiat Yamaha. Well, actually, all the Yamahas. I think the Yamaha basically is the best bike this year.
Yeah,
you know, and the only reason why the Ducati's scoring well is because Stoner is really, really, really good.
Right. Hayden has seemed to have benefited from the test time that they had at Catalunya. Still not doing great, but at least doing better.
A track that he, you know, he knows and he likes. He was actually running really well. He did get taken by Tozel and a couple of the guys at the end, but for a while he was up there in
seventh, I think. Yeah.
So,
and Callio was having a very good race for most of it. And it's, I shouldn't laugh. That's a bummer. And I did you, because that one never even showed up on camera. They just had the aftermath.
I did not see any images of him actually going down. Just already in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, he's not going to be at Laguna.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard that.
He hurt his back.
Oh, boy.
So he's not going to be at Laguna, which is a real bummer.
Yeah.
For that team.
That is a bummer. And obviously, we probably should explain, if you haven't seen Assen, which you probably have, Mika Kallio crashed on the last lap from a good position.
Yeah, he was, I think he was seventh, or sixth maybe even.
Was it that high? Yeah. He was right up there, definitely well into the top ten, wherever it was at. And there was a battle going on. That's actually where the racing was happening.
Between it was like Kallio, Toseland, Elias, Caparossi, Hayden.
Right, there was quite a group. Right?
I think Dean was there for a little while, then he kind of dropped out.
But Assen is always good, a good venue and everything. Lorenzo got a horrifically bad start, but powered through the field for a while. There, it looked like a.
Like, he might actually catch Rossi,
but
Rossi was really controlling the race. And Lorenzo did have this issue with that last section. It was obvious because he was faster than Rossi through everything except that last section.
Right.
And that last section, he really lost everything. He actually talked about it before the race. He said that it's just scary. It's a scary section because you're going so fast and you're doing that transition, left-to-right transition, in that one section. But it's like the three corners before... you slow down for the chicane at the end. It's really fast.
Just couldn't quite master it.
Yeah,
and all that was. Yeah. And actually, Nick Harris was, and Gavin Emmett, or one or the other, was saying pretty much the same thing that they had been talking. And that last section is his bugaboo, if you will. Pedrosa got off to a good start, but ended up crashing out.
He was the first crasher?
He was the first crasher, yeah.
I actually called that he was going to crash. And I basically it was because I, the both the, because he was the, he only was on the first row because he followed Rossi on that, on Rossi's best lap, and then actually did a little bit of drafting and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think that, basically it was a synthetic fast lap. Hmm. And I think that he was running above his pace. It was really surprising to see Dovizioso go down, because that, now I'm thinking that it was, they got a stiffer chassis this weekend.
Right, and in the
now
same
I'm
corner.
Thinking, exactly. Yeah. And I'm thinking there's a bump there, stiffer chassis, they both lose a little bit of feel in the front, and they both go down the same way, pretty much.
Right, pretty much same way, same spot. Yeah, that's a good point. Because Pedrosa, from second on the grid, had pretty much checked out.
Oh, yeah.
At first, but that didn't last long. He was trying his, you know, get out ahead and check out strategy, but it's just not working. And old Danny's still riding injured, so you know he's gonna have.
At least he didn't get any more hurt. It looked like it was just a regular, very, you know, not very painful get off.
He got like he might have hit his elbow. He looked like he hit his elbow pretty hard, but yeah, and he was limping, but he's probably always limping anyway.
I was gonna say,
so yeah,
he probably was limping to the bike
exactly
when he first started. So yeah, and then of course Rossi won his 100th race.
Right.
That was his. Everybody was just wondering, like, what's the celebration gonna be? And then they brought out this banner. This fan club made this banner, which had a photo and a number for every single victory. And seeing that thing unrolled really, like, hit me in the gut. It was like, okay, that's a really interesting way to see just how impressive of a achievement that is, because it was freaking long.
Well, it was way long.
It was speed, like a football field.
Yeah. Speed Channel didn't actually show the entire unrolling of it. You know, they cut to commercial. Like, you know, no, they were, you know, they, at least they showed some of it.
Right.
And so, yeah, they were unrolling. So, you know, I never saw, like, anything to gauge the entire distance of it. But, yeah, that was huge. And also, Rossi's trying to get his helmet off, couldn't get the drinking tube out.
Yeah,
eventually just gave up, put the helmet back on. But,
Yeah,
so it was a good one. And, you know, who knows? We're going out to Laguna Seca. What do you think? Is this going to be 101 for him? Or what are we going to see?
You know, Laguna Seca throws up a lot of surprises. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, for example, if Vermeulen won a race. I wouldn't be that surprised that this would be the race that he would win in the dry. He's so strong here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if Stoner got his mojo back and won. But I'm going to say that it's going to be another Rossi Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Lorenzo, you know, if he doesn't fall off, I mean, he hasn't really done a lap on this track in anger.
That's true.
So, but I think he's got the, it's him and Rossi, I think, from now on. I don't know what's going on with Stoner. I'm going to put out a little theory that it's not a stomach thing, that it's an anxiety issue.
Hmm.
Because I've had some anxiety issues in the past, and everything I see in him are symptoms that I'm recognizing. Like, he gets exhausted. He doesn't feel right. He needs to go to the doctor. They don't really know what's going on. They just say, they call it a virus in the stomach.
Right.
Some kind of an imbalance where he doesn't feel right, whatever. And he's stressed out. And I think he's pissed because I think the bike is not as good as it has been. It's definitely not as good as the Yamaha, so he has to work extra hard. He's the only one who can really do it, too, you know? So there's so much pressure on him.
It's a possibility, Kind of sad, be such a young guy and everything, have so much pressure on you and get anxious about your job in a nutshell when you have what most people would call a dream job.
Yeah. But look how easy he gets pissed off.
People
trying to, what he calls, you know, they're getting in for a free ride to go around the track faster. I think it's bullshit. I mean, like, that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And some of the riders are not hooking up with him. They just happen to be there. And he's like, he's getting all pissy and shit like that. So,
yeah, he's
something going on with him beyond just the physical, you know. I mean, he was definitely physically exhausted at Catalunya. I don't doubt that.
He looked ragged.
He looked like he was going to fall down
from
exhaustion. But there's more going on. I think there's a stress thing going on, too.
Yeah, possibly. Well, hopefully he can counteract that. And if we see a rerun of the excitement that we had last year, that would just be the fantastic weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we have to face the truth is that we've had, you know, four races at Laguna Seca and only one was
really, really great.
Really, really great.
Yeah, it's been
You know, the second one, 2006, was a good race. We had a bunch of leaders. We had Kenny Roberts out there for a little bit, but in the end, it was it was a procession.
Right.
And the only interesting thing about it was Rossi blowing up his engine, you know, after a while.
Right, right. And the heat.
That was very interesting.
Yeah.
So, but I do think that, first of all, it's just going to be great to be there. The weather's looking very good. Like, it's not going to be too hot. It's not going to be too cold. There is some fog warnings, but...
it's kind of normal for that part of California this time of year.
It is,
though.
But hopefully it's not going to be as bad as last year, because I remember last year when they had to
canceled or delayed practice. Yeah.
Practice, yep.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it'll be great stuff. And speaking of that, we, as usual, you know, Johnny on the spot as far as being prepared, we said, let's do a meet and greet, because we did that meet and greet in Indianapolis, and Jules and I both had a great time. We met
how
many people there? Probably at least
20, 30.
Yeah. People out there. So hopefully if you get the word, and we're going to put it up on the Facebook MotoGPOD page, and we're going to Twitter it if we can...
figure out how, because we're old.
But we're going to do it on Saturday between the practice and the qualifying. So Saturday at noon, straight up lunchtime, by the scoring tower, which is right near turn 10. If you were going to go take a walk up the corkscrew, you would be passing the scoring tower, and it's kind of a convenient place because there's food.
There's
not too
food
far
nearby.
From there.
Yep,
yeah,
yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's close to the paddocks. It's and you can't miss it. It's visible from pretty much anywhere in the track.
Right. An easy landmark that there's not like two of and stuff like that. And it's relatively close to the Turn 5 Chalet, sponsored by Power Sport Dynamic, that we'll be at. So we'll be near our beer and water supply. But no, so 12 o'clock Saturday, not the timing tower, but the scoring tower there at Laguna Seca. And I've got a MotoGPOD t-shirt I'll be wearing. I don't know about you, Jules, if you're wearing one or not. But
probably, I don't know what I'll be wearing.
Yeah.
I might be wearing the Riders for Health shirt.
Oh, there you go, Riders for Health. And plus, you know, there'll be a gaggle of people and all that. And just basically start stopping random people on and say, are you Bob or are you Jules? And
yeah, and if you could actually just, if you're listening to this early, like if you're listening to this right now, you know, and it's Thursday... Let other people know, like, you know, Twitter it or
pass the word.
Post to our Facebook group.
Yeah,
you know, anybody can post to that to the wall.
Since we are so late out of the gate on it,
pass it on.
But it'll be fun. We always like meeting people. So, all right, I think we've already gone a little longer than we had planned.
Of course,
of course, not the longest show that we've got ever. But unless you got something else, why don't we jump into these interviews?
Yeah. So I just wanted to apologize for the cell phone noise on the Randy Mamola thing. I totally forgot about the cell phone. It was in my pocket. And so you're going to hear the me noises again, but it's worth listening to. Randy Mamola is really fun.
It's Randy Mamola.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, all right. Here we go.
Hey, hi. This is Jules Cisek from MotoGPOD, and I'm sitting here with Randy Mamola at MDK Motors in Redwood City. How's it going, Randy?
I'm good.
You came into the States on Wednesday, I heard. Right?
Yes, Wednesday the 24th, the day after the kids came out of school in Barcelona, Spain.
Oh, nice. Is that when this year ends over there?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So so you're here for the writers' event, and then, of course, Laguna Seca, and then I guess you go on vacation?
Yeah. You know, my wife is from Belgium. Both kids were both born in Barcelona, and, you know... Everyone always asks where I live. I kind of live in a suitcase because I'm always at this year I go to 17 Grand Prix events, and I can pick and choose the ones that I really want to go to. I didn't go to Assen today, for example, because I wanted to come to the event here at MDK for riders and to try to raise awareness about what we do with the charity that I'm co-founder of. And then we have Laguna Seca, and obviously it's a chance for my wife and kids to come here and visit a little bit. And the deal kind of is, because my wife's from Europe and I have all my friends here, is, okay, we'll come to the States as long as we get a holiday trip out of it, because a holiday to them is not staying with grandparents.
Right, right.
As you can kind of know in family side of things.
Yeah. Cool. So tell me very quickly about when you got involved with Riders.
Well, back over 20 years ago, back in 85, 86, I donated some money to Princess Anne, who is the president of Save the Children.
Right.
And I was very outspoken in Grand Prix racing and trying to make things better. And the FIM, Federation International Motorcycles, always said, oh, you Americans are just after the money, blah, blah, blah. So long story short is I gave a percentage of my money, my income, to Princess Anne. And over the next couple of years, she said, I want you to see where this money's being spent. And the reason why I chose Save the Children was because it's a worldwide organization and it helps kids. And so over the next couple of years, she said, you know, I want to go to Africa. And eventually I went to Africa in 1988. And basically since then, we started a program called Riders for Health. And it had nothing to do with riders wanting health. It has to do with people riding motorcycles, delivering health in rural areas of Africa. And slowly but surely, in the last 20 years, it's been working. We reach over 12 million people in Africa, and it's still growing.
Yeah, it's an amazing charity. Just for motorcyclists, it's perfect because the translation of the love of the sport and the needs, obviously, of the countries that you're in, you know.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
When did you have your first motorcycle?
Oh, God, 1989.
Okay, how old were you when you got
your first bike? I was like 20.
Okay. So you were a little bit later than me. I got mine at 12.
Wait, and 22.
But it doesn't really matter because no matter what age you get your bike, you've had a smile on your face ever since.
Yeah, absolutely.
And only us motorcyclists kind of know that. We're not like this strange group of people, and you know, I grew up in the Bay Area here. Mm-hmm. I was born in 59. I'll be 50 this year. And you know, back in the 60s and the 70s, drugs and all that kind of stuff that was happening, Hell's Angels and so on. You know, bikes back then got a really bad rap.
That's right.
And so so that stigma kind of still follows. We're always still trying to push out of things. I don't know if you have any friends that don't ride bikes or thinking you're nuts that you ride a motorcycle.
All the time.
You know, and that kind of thing. But what I see it is, you know, the hero in my life is a motorcycle. And since I was 12, so 38 years, basically, I've had a bike in my life. And it's been a source of income for a long time. You know, I was second in the world championship 4 different times on 3 different brands of motorcycles, 57 podiums. I've beaten the best in the world and raced with the best in the world for 3 different decades on the same podium.
And very entertaining way.
Yes. So by doing that, it came from a motorcycle. And the great thing about it is motorcycles brings us into a very, kind of like this, it's not a club, but a society that
it's
everybody
a fraternity
knows.
In a way, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, but the unique thing about it is whoever buys a motorcycle, there's people that I met today that don't know anything about MotoGP, don't know anything about the racing side of things, but they ride bikes.
Right.
But they're very interested in what Riders for Health does because they fell in love with motorcycles and now they see motorcycles being used to help save people's lives. And for me, that's the same thing. We're here. I don't know what you do specifically for a living, but obviously this is connected to motorcycles, what you do, the love of the sport.
Absolutely.
And you and I wouldn't have met without a motorcycle. The people, 12 million people wouldn't be reached by motorcycles if I wasn't involved 38 years ago when I first started. And my love of the sport, my family who taught me very well into respect of the things that you have, not the things that you don't have, kind of made me be a person that was a giving person. And so it wasn't just side the money side of things. I'm very jealous of someone like Tiger Woods, of someone like Bono at U2. Bob Geldof of when they put the We Are the World, because these people are in driving positions of when they speak, a lot of people listen. You know, governments are listening in Africa and so on and so forth. I don't have that same kind of voice outside of my sport, but within my sport, I have quite a strong character and a strong voice and a strong commitment to my sport still. And so therefore, this is where I'm raising the awareness. Now, we have people that have done things for us. Brad Pitt. Everybody outside our sport knows who Brad Pitt is. Tom Cruise. Jay Leno. These are people that have
Ewan
done
McGregor.
Things for us. Yeah, Ewan McGregor, who have done things for us that can reach the outside world. Outside world meaning the ones that are not in our club or motorcycle. So the unique thing is Bono can do what he can with raising money with his guitar. But the guitar doesn't save the lives like we do. We not only can raise the money, but the same tool that you and I use to enjoy life is the same tool that's being ridden to save people's lives. And that's so unique. I think it's the only one that exists coming from it. It doesn't matter if Formula One or NASCAR or anybody goes to raise the money. It's not really, I mean, NASCAR would probably be the closest one, or Formula One. You have a, I don't know, a Range Rover going to go after with people to help people. You know, we found out a long time ago. UNICEF, you know, uses a Range Rover, goes one direction. We can go 10 to 15 directions with the same cost with running bikes. And the unique thing about it is this: the African people that we teach on how to run the program. So there's a lot of things that that I'm involved in, but obviously this is one of the most beneficial ones of giving back to the community and let alone the world.
That's great. Yeah, and you guys do much more than just train riders. You also train mechanics, right?
Yes.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah, one of the things about, you know, most people don't realize, you know, that, you know, so many American people are giving people to charity when there's a crisis someplace in the world. And as you know, we're going through a worldwide crisis. You know, the economy, families don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but we all have to try to pull together. And it's quite funny because if there's a tsunami someplace in the Far East, you know, Americans are the first ones to try to donate and try to help those people. But this world has just been hit by a tsunami, and we're all in the same thing, and the world's still shaking, and the world needs an injection every place. But Africa goes on living in terms of in its desire. I mean, it's in its not disgrace, but I can't find the word right now, but in its desire to succeed. Mm-hmm. But it can't. I mean, you know, 40,000 children die a day of crazy diseases. And
a lot of diseases that actually are totally treatable if they...
Right. You know, malaria, nets for the malaria. You know,
it seems drinking so simple, bad, and yet...
But you need education. I mean, if you live in an area in Africa, like, you know, we're talking in Redwood City right now. Let's say that you lived in, that there's a village in Sacramento that has 20,000 people. Well, I can't get there unless I've got transportation. And if I do get there, I only go there once, maybe twice a month, or once every 2 months. And so in those rural areas, we can change the people's lives a lot by going there twice a week. But if we train the doctors that's in charge of those villages, you know, one, you know, we have a DVD that's been playing ongoing here. I don't know if you saw, but there's a guy that's takes care of 13,000 patients.
Amazing.
13,000 people. I mean, imagine asking the Sunnyvale doctor here, you know, you got to have 13,000 patients. I mean, one of the things, the only thing he'd think about is ching-ching, the money he's going to make. And in Africa, it's just about saving their people.
Right.
And that's the unique thing. And it brings tears to my eyes to go to Africa and watch somebody ride an AG200 Yamaha to go and save their own people's lives, because it's the same motorcycle that I brought a smile on me in 1972. It's the same thing that's bringing smiles to those people in Africa, and that's the very unique thing about it.
That's great, great. Can we also talk about a little bit about the series?
Yes, sure.
So one thing I wanted to ask you was the switch from 990s to 800s. Seems to have kind of made the series a little bit less exciting. Do you think that was that, maybe, or just the introduction of electronics?
I think it's a combination of both. I think that, you know, we discussed this quite a lot. I think if you still had 990s, the electronics on it would still be overriding everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wouldn't see that active styling that we saw backing it in, going into corners, sliding, coming out with the 990s the first year. Especially with Honda's five-cylinder, you know, you had five or six riders that won on that bike. They were all basically on Michelin except for Tamada.
Yeah.
When you look back at that, and then you had this fire-breathing dragon Ducati that Caparossi won a couple Grand Prix in the first year, and we just thought, my God, that thing's amazing. Did 215-mile-an-hour top speed in Barcelona and so on. You know, we went to 800s, and the technology just kept growing and kept growing. It is what it is. I mean, I enjoy it both ways. I enjoy the technology to the side where I look at it and just go, oh my God, how can these things be doing the things that they're doing? And, you know, this is just a testament to where everything's at in sports, what you could buy in a car now versus what we had when we were kids, and so on. The thing is, it's taken away from the visual. And the visual is backing it in, sliding it around. You still get to see a lot of that in the AMA races, mm-hmm. in the World Superbike races, yeah. because basically it's a standardized chassis coming from a street bike. When a race bike is really formed as a prototype, it can be built up from ground up. And if the regulations support it and it's allowed, you're going to take advantage of anything you can do to it. You know, Friday mornings are Friday, and there's only one practice now on Fridays, but Friday is the time where you're going to see the bikes moving around the most, and that's because the setups aren't completely set up.
Right.
The thing is, there's a place for that. I mean, it's okay if it's an Olympic year, and every 4 years you come out with a new bike, and you go, okay, check this out, and you run them, and you leave it out of the garages, and then Honda goes back licking its wounds because Ducati just came out with something that was incredible because the regulation said it was. And then you go back 4 years. But when you have a series that goes week after week, and what we're used to is spectacularism. So imagine taking the jumps out of Supercross.
Right.
Because you can go faster. Take the sliding out of a rally car. I understand it. And a racer wants to go as fast as he can go. And if the regulation says it, it's there, it's going to be there. I don't know if you've done any riding, but I'm sure a lot of your listeners have ridden motocross bikes, come from two-stroke, especially the older generation, riding two-stroke bikes. And when four-strokes came in, you just went, oh, my God, this is fun.
Yeah.
This is great. There's so much more understanding. Yeah, but the spectacularism is just watching a 250. Imagine those guys, James Stewart and Chad Reed and those guys riding two-strokes now, how cool that would look. I mean, the beast that they're on now at 450 pumps your arms of just thinking about it, the super motards and the things that are going on. There's a basis of it that, yeah, they can. A lot more people can ride them and ride them safer,
mm-hmm.
But there's no more backing it in. There's no more. And what we've done, basically, for me, the 1,000 cc's, the 990s, were kind of like watching a 450 backing it in on a super motard track and accelerating and smoking the tire. And then we went to an 800, which was kind of like saying, okay, no more 450s, four strokes. You got to build a 250, and you got to make it real peaky to get the same amount of power out mm-hmm. of it. And you got to force it with electronics to make it safe. And so that's where we're at. So they track going in, track coming out, and we can't see any of that rider talent. It almost looks too easy, but it's not. But it almost looks too easy. And the thing is, it doesn't matter if you're Valentino Rossi, 7 times world champion. When you don't have the setup right because the electronics can override your own riding power, it's kind of like getting into that go-kart that all your friends have got, and you've got the slowest one, and you're stuck in it. And you can hang with them, but you can't pass them. You just can't do it. And then the guy who has the fastest one that day is kind of riding rings around you.
Yeah.
And that's the technology side. But it is what it is.
So last thing is, you're very famous for being... quite a showman when you were racing, and there was this great incident in Le Mans where you I think you were with Freddie Spencer, and you weren't going to catch him, and you did a little bit of a stoppie there.
Yeah, this was actually in Paul Ricard. It was in France, but it was in Paul Ricard,
okay.
A different circuit.
Okay.
And no, this wasn't during the race. This was after the race, actually, in the fan. I mean, there's things get trailed along, as you can imagine, years ago, 22 years ago is when this happened, I got in trouble for it and that kind of stuff. Yeah. I was a showman, and there's no two ways about it. And you know, a lot of people said, he was too much of a showman, and that's why he didn't win world championships. Listen, in 86, when Eddie Lawson won the world championship, I beat him on the same motorcycle in 1987. It's just that Gardner beat us both. I was with Team Roberts. We were trying to be the best Yamaha team. We were the best Yamaha team, and Eddie was already 3 times world champion. The points just didn't come to me, and it just didn't happen. Going back to an Olympic year, we all love the Olympics, especially when we were young, growing up thinking you're going to represent your country. Listen, I came away being on the podium at 3 different decades, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, in the biggest class,
yeah.
Riding the most difficult bikes, racing against the most competitive riders, Eddie, Wayne, Schwantz, McNewen, Kenny Sr., Barry Sheen.
Rainey.
Wayne. J. just so many, so much talent. And I came away with 4 silver medals and 2 bronze. So I didn't do too bad.
I was going to say that the showmanship actually, I think, brought a lot more to the sport, because for a long time,
you probably can't get enough questions in here because I want to talk. And the thing is, I've got a lot to say. This is my sport. And if I treat it as mine, I take care of it. And as I said, the sport's been great to me. I do some work with Alpine Star on their website. I do some work with Road Racer X here, and in writing a column with Chris Johnham. I love this sport, and it's been great. And the thing is, we're here because of a day of Riders for Health. Riders.org is what everybody needs to be turned on to, and follow us. And try to just branch out and get it to be stronger. And it's to be proud that motorcycles are actually saving lives. If you put in Google search Elton John Riders for Health, you'll see a program that we run 120 motorcycles for him, taking vaccinations and medical things for people in Lesotho, the country inside of South Africa. And but very few people know about it. You know, Brad Pitt did a DVD that was on PBS, narrated it for us with Microsoft's money. Putting it together. The Bill Gates Foundation is working with us. So there's a lot of things to be proud of. The sport's still trying to find its feet. The 250 class is going to be gone next year. It's going to be a Moto2.
Yeah.
I got to ride a Moto2 last week. It was awesome. Good fun. You don't know what a Formula 3 engine sounds like, but in the car world, Formula 3 scream. And they really buzz a lot. And you can imagine... 35 are going to be on the grid, then there's two extra for the wild cards. There's going to be a screaming of bumblebees. It's going to be the class, I think, that saves a lot about motorcycling because it's a single engine. I'm really excited about it to see about it because I think it'll bring in a lot of young talent. And it'll be very, very cost effective because it'll be a single engine. The AMA over here is struggling with a lot of... It was really funny talking to Jake Zemke, and Jake was in Monza, and I went there because he was riding Stigefeld's Honda because Hopkins had gotten hurt. I said, how's it going with the AMA? Oh my God, the people are at an uproar still. The teams, the manufacturers, they all don't like what's going on with DMG and so on. I said, yo, how's the racing? He goes, racing's quite good. I said, well, that's what they were trying to straighten out.
Yeah.
That's one thing that they were trying to straighten out. And he goes, well, it's actually working, you know? And I think it's going to take time over here with AMA and so on. But it seems like we're all screwed up in our own sport. You know, the AMA is doing one thing. The FIM for World Superbike is doing another thing. And MotoGP is doing another. We really need to get together as a sport. I'd like to change the way that we see MotoGP over here, especially on TV with Speed Channel. I think it's a disgrace that we have 2 USGPs now, Laguna Seca and Indianapolis. And we should be proud of those, and we should demand that we do have it on the same day at least. I think World Superbike's on the same day. I mean, I know tomorrow's Donington, and it's shown on the same day. And for the life of me, I don't understand why MotoGP's not. We got American riders over there doing well. Nikki Hayden's a 2006 world champion, and I think we need to stand up for it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, so thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, now and thanks for your time. There and,
we'll go raise some money. Stuff. We'll go raise some money.
Thanks, Randy.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Ciao.
Hello, this is Jim Race for MotoGP OD, and on the line I've got Leon Haslam. How are you doing today, Leon?
Very good. Very good.
Excellent. Well, we're catching you right after the Donington weekend, which was, well, without going into too many platitudes, just a fantastic result for you. You qualified pretty well. And race one, how about if you just run through how that went for you?
Yeah, obviously qualifying, we ended up ninth, which, to be fair, I was a little disappointed with. We were in top three most of the weekend, and we made a little bit of a mistake on second Super Pole 2, and it put me ninth position, but 0.1 of a second would have put me third, so... I was disappointed, but not too much because we wasn't too far away. Race one, we managed to get an off-decent start, and we worked our way up to fourth position, which I was happy with, but I was just more frustrated that I couldn't get away with the leading group. So obviously, I was first Brit and first Honda, so again, was more looking forward to the second race where I actually got a much better start. I was fifth away, and to be fair, it was a bit of a carnage race. There was a lot of crashes. Hager went down, Biaggi went down, Nakano had a big one, there was several people crashed behind me, and I managed to work my way through the carnage up to a second place. So obviously to get back on the podium at my home round was obviously really exciting.
And that that race stood you well in the championship standing. It moved you up, I believe, to sixth. Is that correct?
Actually, moved me up to fifth in the championship. Yeah, just ahead of Max Biaggi on the Aprilia, and I'm only a few points now behind fourth place. So, it was a good round for us, and getting back home was real nice as well. You know, to race in front of the home crowd and all that. So, it was a good weekend.
Absolutely. It's kind of been an interesting season because you guys came out of the blocks on fire, and it looked like Stiggy was going to be, and frankly, it still has been, Stiggy was going to be the dominant Hondas, and then you kind of had a dip there in the middle, but now you seem to be coming on real strong again. How much of that is down to the new suspension?
Yeah, you know, it's we've been running the Öhlins all year, and 10K obviously made the move to Öhlins a couple of rounds ago, and obviously, we come out of the blocks real good. I felt we had a half-reasonable package. We've been lacking in the engine area a little bit from day one, and basically the few rounds that we had real good results at, like Australia and Assen, was circuits that I know quite well from my GP days. And then in the mid-season, we had four races on the bounce, which I'd not ever been to. We've come across a few issues with electrical and mechanical problems, and having three DNFs in a row doesn't quite help your championship out with one thing and another. So, like I say, that was another reason, which was nice to get back to my home race, another circuit that I knew, and some engine improvements as well, which is always nice.
And now you're on pretty much a nice little extended summer break. You pretty much don't race for a month. What are you doing between now and then to stay in top form and ready to come back at Brno?
Yeah, obviously, I'm back in with my trainer, Kurt Gibbons. You know, he trains a lot of top motocross boys, and it's nice to get back in the gym with him today. And we've got another few more days of that. And then basically, we're quite busy. We've got a test at Brno next week for 3 days. We've got a week off, and then another test in Imola, which everyone's going to be at because it's an official test. So, in the next 3 weeks, we've probably got 5 days of testing and quite a bit of training to do, and just a bit of relaxing as well, and enjoy being at home for a few days.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a misnomer because there is no such thing as a mid-season vacation. All that time is taken up the opportunity to get the bikes in top shape, and not quite like preseason off having fun with the boys at trials and whatnot, right?
Yeah, sure. You know, I know the team are working 20-hour days pretty much since January, so I'm sure, hopefully they'll get a few days rest, and it gives everyone a bit more of a focus for the upcoming races. But like I say, we have got a test at Brno, which is our next race, so I'm looking forward to get a little bit of track time in and try some stuff that we've been wanting to try for a long time now, and this is our first proper test of the season, so hopefully we can eliminate a few things and make some more progress with the bike as well.
Can you leak anything about what things that you've been wanting to try on the bike, or is that top secret stuff?
No, it's just general stuff. Obviously, we've got a full electronics package with our bike, and because it's a new team, we've been trying to introduce a lot of new stuff throughout the season at certain races, and that's been kind of been our downfall as well. If you don't get it right with the electronics, there's not much you can do in your riding to ride around it, and that's caused a few not so great results. So we're going to basically do the elimination process with a few things, all stuff that we've tried to introduce through races and ended up turning it off for race day and not really having much of a setup. We're going to basically go through all that over these next few days. We've got a slight upgrade with some new front forks, and we've also got some new engine characteristic parts that we want to try and change around just to try and close the gap on the factory boys, on the top speed that they've got.
You say the factory boys, but then you guys have been, doing some damn good racing this year, and it was a bit of a surprise to not see 10K up there. You've had a kind of a succession of teammates this year with injuries. That must be a little bit strange.
Yeah, obviously everyone that's jumped on it, obviously two American guys, obviously John Hopkins is on it at the minute, who's still recovering really from his hip injury. And obviously, Jake Zemke filled in for a few races, and before that we had Robbie Rolfo, who was obviously an XGP rider. So, you know, we've had some real top-end riders on the other side of the garage, and it's always cool, you know, to have someone like that pushing and developing. But, you know, I think John, once he comes back full fitness, he's going to be pretty competitive, and, you know, it'd be good to have him on the other side of the garage to progress things a little faster, you know.
Yeah, I think so, too. Stability is kind of key when you're trying to build a bike up and trying to modify it for each individual rider over a period of races. It's kind of crazy. Well, listen, hey, Leon, I thank you for taking the time to talk with us, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk to you again later in the season.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Great. Cheers, Leon. Thanks.
All right, that's going to do it for today. Hope you liked the little quickie show. Hope that we see you at Laguna Seca. Jules, any parting words?
Ciao.
Ciao. One of the very few. This is actually the first show we've ever done where we're both sitting in the same room talking to each other.
Didn't we do a show at Thunder Hill? We did a little
round robin-y thing. You're right, but that was Ferguson. Just with a recorder. Yeah. Okay. But yeah. Otherwise, it's always Skype. Well, whatever. Thanks a lot for downloading the show, and we'll talk to you again real, real soon, and hope to see you out there at Laguna Seca.
Cool. Ciao.
Ciao. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.